Being the Worst, Episode 34, recorded Thursday, August 1st, 2013. From beingtheworst.com, it's the Being the Worst podcast, audio apprenticeships for the aspiring software craftsman, with your hosts, Carrie Street and Renat Abdulid. This episode is the second of a three-part series on client-side development. Carrie and Renat discuss the changes that were made to the Samples WinForms client to make it easier to add new features. They review the three main contexts in their GTD sample, the benefits of passing around a mutable state, and dig into graphical user interface architectures like MVC and MVVM. This sets them up for the next episode, where they apply MVVM to the Samples cross-platform mobile application. And now, here are Carrie and Renat. All right, Renat, it's been several weeks since we discussed the application we were working on, and you've been coding like a madman. I saw lots and lots of commits while I was away on my vacation, and I couldn't wait to get back to talk to you about what is all the stuff you've been doing, because in the last episode, we talked about just the initial throw something out there and try to figure out what we're doing on this client. And I haven't even had a chance to do my homework yet, and I'm kind of glad I didn't do it because I think you got a lot of other stuff working, and a lot of the design seems to have changed to be more elegant and understandable to me. So why don't we dive into like what's going on now with the code?
Okay, terrific. Sounds good. So basically, what I've been doing with the design and the structure of the components is to change the design in such way that it will simplify the process of adding new features. Basically, design is something that we create and that should help us to get to the next step. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like when we define something design, it's not something immutable. It's something that changes. It's something that helps the system to grow. So I've been doing a bit of designing and prototyping and also actually a lot of reading. So I've been reading on things like model, view controller, design patterns in the UI, etc., etc., just to make sure that at least some of the vocabulary in the system matches to what people are actually saying. Mm-hmm. And currently in our system, we have like three different contexts. One context being the context that we established in the very beginning. It's the domain model. It's a stuff with the aggregates, with the trusted system aggregate, with its commands, methods, and events that it publishes. Mm-hmm. The second context, it's actually we started creating it while building a console application, but since then it's got slightly more evolved. It's the UI model or client model context. Mm-hmm. UI model or client model, it's almost like read model, but it has certain behaviors. You can perceive it as an aggregate that kind of reacts to events published by the domain model. This aggregate maintains internal state that represents the state of a UI, like desktop application.
You mean think of the entire client context as a one big aggregate related to the UI?
Yes.
Okay.
So basically, we're modeling the stuff that we'll be later presenting on the screen.
Right.
And this state, when it changes, it publishes UI-specific events. And these UI-specific events are really dumb. I even put them inside the big dumb class. So basically, if in our domain model, we have something like project created, project outcome corrected, etc., etc., mm-hmm. In dumb events, we have only project added, project modified, project deleted. Simply because at the UI level, we don't really care if one of the fields was changed or the other one, simply because we use these events as notifications. Mm-hmm. We still have the original events being really specific, that project outcome has changed, and that's how we persist our changes on the disk, and we'll persist them on the server, because these precise events, they really needed to synchronize and then to avoid conflicts while doing collaborative work.
Right.
While collaborating with other people on the same trusted system or while doing the work from multiple devices.
And just a clarifying question around the word context. When you're talking about we have these different contexts, the UI and the domain that you've discussed so far, do you mean bounded context like in DDD terms or just sort of generically a context?
So basically, A context is a way to identify a group of entities or objects that share certain common capabilities. And this sharing, this common trait is important to us. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about the bounded contexts, we say that everything that is inside this context shares the same language. And it is really, really important for us to be aware about this boundary and to preserve it. Mm-hmm. Here, when I'm talking about domain context versus UI context, mm-hmm. the languages are somewhat shared and somewhat distinct.
Okay.
So basically, by saying that we have domain context and UI context, I'm saying that these areas, there are differences between them. Mm-hmm. And some of the differences, there might be not about the language. Hence, I can't say these are different bounded contexts. But there are something that is different, and something these differences are important to us, and we want to preserve them.
Okay, so the key word there is language as it relates to what DDD calls a bounded context. It's really about the language we're using.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
For example, like use of the word context in real world, there is term like, for example, archaeological context, an event in time which has been preserved in archaeological record. Or, I don't know, context in language use, it's constraints of the communicative situation, like stuff that is relevant to us while we speak,
mm-hmm.
and something stuff that surrounds the meaning of the words that we use. In the software and design, context is characteristics of a certain like building block or a certain component that in which it works, in which it develops, and which are important to understand how this actual building blocks or design pattern is applied.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have three contexts which are we share some of their language, so hence we can't call them a different bounding context. Actually, these three contexts share exactly the same ubiquitous language. We still talk about the projects, we still talk about the actions, stuff, etc., etc.
Right.
By the way, for those who missed it, we used to have things we put in the inbox as thoughts, but then there was a bit of redesign trying to align the language with getting things down terminology, as perceived from David Allen's book, and now we're calling this stuff.
Yes.
So we put stuff in the inbox.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Thanks for mentioning that. I forgot that was a pretty big change. So if you look at the code from the last episode and this episode, you'll see a lot of just renames from thoughts to stuff. So those three layers, though, you mentioned the domain model, the UI model, and then you're treating the presentation layer as another context, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And so the UI model or client model, well, I really need to pick up proper definition. Well, to pick one of the terms, and maybe it will help me later.
Mm-hmm.
So let's for now stick to the naming in the code. So it's called client model.
Okay.
But it refers to different types of client applications, like tablet application or smartphone application or desktop application or web application.
Meaning that the client model is applicable to any of those, reusable?
Technically, yes. We'll see how it works out later. So okay. Basically, it's an underlying read model and notification subsystem for implementing client application.
And is that where the behavior for the, like the properties that the UI references exists?
Yes, it's model.
Hmm.
It's data objects. And so basically, I evolved this client model from the big client projection that we used to have in the console app. So it still kind of behaves like a projection, but it became more complicated. It deviated from the original design a little bit. And the biggest deviation being, well, there are two deviations. First deviation is that now it publishes events. It publishes change events. It is not event sourced, which means that it is not persisted by publishing events which are then replayed, but it publishes different events. So how this works, when we load our application, like event stores are loaded, and then when the application starts, this client model will ask event store for the latest, like for the entire event stream for the trusted system. Then this client model as a component, oh, there is a controller for that client model. So a client model controller will replay all the events for the client model, and then it will tell it that the loading has been finished. And now the client model will be subscribed to all incoming events from the system.
Is there a place in the code that I could be looking at to see that?
Let's try client model controller. So I think if you're on ReSharper and using IntelliIDEA theme, keyboard theme, you need to press Control M and then CMC. Types just CMC. For now, you can open gtd.clientcore.
Client core,
Go to models folder and open client model controller.
Client model controller, got it.
Okay, so client model controller is a controller that sits between the messaging subsystem of this client application and different components. So basically, controllers are a messaging unit of kind of compartmentalization of functionality.
Okay.
The host, like, they are responsible for managing functionality. And they are not linked to the UI specific code. Like, so they are not linked to Windows forms. So technically, they can be reused between multiple UI platforms.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, actually, everything that sits in the gtd.client core, this is like the model and all the controllers, it's reusable.
It's
technically reusable. Practically, we'll see how it works.
Okay.
Okay, so the controller here, it subscribes to the in events on the message bus of the system. So basically, it simply wires these events to the model. It acts as kind of small application service.
Mm-hmm.
So when this application starts, then it like kind of picks the current trusted system ID that is associated with this installation, or it creates a new one.
Mm-hmm.
And then it publishes an event called profile loaded, like user profile loaded.
Okay.
So when client model controller, it's like all the way down to the end of this class, but before dumb class starts.
Mm-hmm.
So when profile loaded event is published, this client model controller, it creates new instance of client model, and then it replaces the entire event stream of the current trusted system into this model.
Mm, okay.
So that the model as a read model is up to the date. Then it tells this model that the loading has been completed. Which means that from now on, well, it means two things. First of all, whenever a new change event from the domain model comes down here, then the model will not only change itself, but it will also publish UI change event.
Mm-hmm.
Something like stuff changed, inbox changed, stuff was added to the inbox, project changed.
Mm-hmm.
And second thing, at the end of the loading, model publishes a client model loaded event. And actually, one of the cool things that I've done with the client model is that I've been looking a lot deeply into the immutability and the stuff that Microsoft Teams were using for Roslyn compiler. And what they were using immutable data structures to represent state of the abstract syntax tree.
Hmm.
In our stuff, it's like the immutability is not fully implemented, but it can be fully implemented later. But in short, for the outside world, when a client model, when something changes, client model publishes an event that doesn't just say that, like, hey, client model was loaded. It includes a copy of the entire client model to the world. So when we publish an in-memory event called client model loaded, this client model loaded event, it includes immutable client model, which includes like the entire inbox and all the projects.
Hmm.
So basically, the immutability here, it means two things. That we could structure our model in such a way that it would be extremely cheap to publish copies, events, that references or that reference parts of this model. And these events like could include as much information as needed, and it can be they can be safely passed around because they are immutable, and hence other code can't concurrently change them. And so basically, we won't have any nasty side effects.
So I'm getting the sense that this is a really cool thing, but I'm not wiring them together. So give me the practical, like, how are we going to practically use that and why is it awesome?
Okay, so basically, when client model loads, when it's finished like loading to the latest version of event storage, it will publish client model loaded. This client model loaded, it includes the entire copy of the client model that was made immutable.
Okay.
This means that, for example, in our inbox part, inbox component, which is like the left side, the left panel, we no longer need to actually try to reach the client model. We can simply subscribe to first to the client model loaded event and then get all the data from this model, from this event, and bind it directly to the UI. in the event that comes to us, we have all the information needed to display. Mm-hmm. And all the other components in the system, when they are initially loading and then when they need to present the initial state, they need to subscribe to only the same event, client model loaded. They don't. So basically in this case, since we have our UI events, UI messages, they are in memory.
Yes.
So we don't need to try to them to reuse them for the event sourcing and the event storage. So we don't need to make them really compact, succinct. And we can actually share a lot of the release state, and we can actually publish the entire thing that changed in our change notification. And I know this might sound counterintuitive, but it's possible to adjust slightly the client model in such a way that publishing this stuff around will be really cheap. We won't be actually publishing a lot of, like, we won't be reusing a lot of memory, because that's the same client model that will be shared by all the event consumers. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's really cheap and it's really reliable, and it's really easy to use in like in the case if you have multiple processing threads.
Okay.
And I know in this application of the pattern, it doesn't sound exciting, but if we talk about the Roslyn compiler, which is a future C# compiler for Visual Studio, mm-hmm. so basically they are representing abstract syntax tree mm-hmm. As immutable data. Abstract syntax tree is like logical representation of the code, including like this is the class, these are the methods, etc., etc. And their abstract syntax trees are immutable.
Okay.
However, at the same time, they support IntelliSense and like real-time refactoring. So, which means as you type the code in your editor, mm-hmm. so the structure of the code changes. So yeah. You can actually rename a variable. You can do like delete entire file or paste a block. And as you change that, actually immutable tree changes as well.
Oh, it's a dynamically changing immutable tree.
Yes. So basically, they're creating copies of that tree, and like all the stuff that hasn't changed, it's simply copied over. And the nodes, the leaves of the tree that were changed, they are replaced.
I see.
So they're kind of creating a new version of the tree every time, but at the same time, this tree reuses almost everything from the previous copy.
I see. Yeah, you get all that awesome benefit without the penalty of having all these copies. It's you're getting sort of the best of both worlds, basically.
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool.
And that's the stuff that I've started applying in client model.
I see.
So basically, one of the biggest benefits of using like this kind of smart immutability approach is that it relaxes your mind. It allows your mind to be publishing the entire model, like be publishing entire copy of the client state. Because currently, my client state is not truly immutable. I'm just freezing it when something happens and publishing the freezed copy.
Right.
But I know that I can improve the implementation later because that's relatively easy to do.
I see. Okay. I saw these things in here. You're like read only immutable stuff, and I wasn't sure what that was, but now at least know what it's related to.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So basically, our second context is UI model, mm-hmm. our client model, and this client model is managed like wired to the system. To the messaging system via client model controller. So client model controller is responsible for plugging it in, and the client model itself, it maintains a read model that is friendly to the UI and that represents current state of the trusted system, and it also publishes change notifications when something changes.
Okay.
And these change notifications, they happen to include entire copies of the model, entire chunks of the model as immutable objects referenced in the client model, which means that previously in some of the controllers and views in the part of the UI, I was doing like two works in two steps. First, I was subscribing to the domain events to see what something that has changed in the domain. And then I was kind of going to this read model and querying this read model for the latest state of some element of the client model. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't need to do this second step to go to the client model and query some change, because I can simply subscribe to the change event and it will bring everything that is needed. Hmm. And so basically, I can, I think it's in the inbox controller. Oh, no, sorry, navigation controller. So, navigation controller and navigation are this left pane of the UI.
Okay.
And sorry, when I said that inbox controller and inbox were the left pane in the UI, so, no,
inbox controller is the right pane that is shown on your in the inbox.
Yeah, the bigger one that has the stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so navigation controller and navigation view, they represent the left part of the UI. They represent like the inbox node and a list of all the projects that you have.
Yes.
And so in this inbox controller, we can actually say that, so if the client model publishes an event message called dump project added, all we do is we can reload the entire project list. If we say that stuff was added to the inbox, all we do is we update the entire inbox node. So basically, the controller will define UI-specific, case-specific behavior in response to the UI change event. And in general, UI change event carries over enough information to make this decision and display really easy.
You know what this stuff needs?
Mm-hmm.
One of Renaud's famous Visio box diagrams to describe like how all these things are happening and flowing all over the place.
Maybe it won't be Visio, because lately when I'm doing design diagrams, I'm trying to just sketch them on the notebook, on the paper, mm-hmm. and then attach a copy.
Perfect.
Attach
a
photo. Because it's much faster and it allows you to be more creative than Visio. Because Visio diagrams, I spend like an hour on them to make them pretty. And while drawing by hand, by pen, I can spend 5 minutes to get one version and then iterate it and then 5 more minutes to get better version. And this diagram, they're not pretty, but they're much faster and they're much more precise.
I would encourage you to do that for the blog post that goes along with this episode. I think I'm understanding, and I haven't had a chance to really look too much into the code yet. Mm-hmm. So I think when I play this back and listen to the light bulbs are going to start going off. But I think that for these kinds of things, when you're trying to envision, like, how are all these models and controllers and stuff, like, working together to do stuff, if you could sketch that out and we can put a picture of your drawing on there, I think that'll help me and a lot of people understand, like, how these items are working together.
Absolutely, we'll do that.
Awesome.
Okay, so basically, we talked about the client model. Let's talk about the presentation layer.
Okay.
So in the presentation layer, we kind of have the same model view client separation.
Mm-hmm.
Where views, they're really thin, they have as little behavior as possible, which makes kind of it possible to test controllers by implementing test versions of the views.
And we have our views in the gtd.client project, right?
Yes.
Yep.
I put them out there to enforce separation between views and the controllers.
Yep, cool. Yep, and they're in the gtd.client project in the views folder. That's where our right now, that's a Windows Forms views.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Okay, so the view controllers, they implement UI-specific behaviors to display some state to the user and manage some transitions of that state.
Okay.
So basically, the controller is, in some sense, it either you can think of it as if it manages UI view, like part of the screen, part of the application that's visible to the user. On the other side, it also manages the user. It manages the user's expectations, and it manages what is shown to the user.
Okay, so let's pick one view and the controller that goes with it that you're talking about and where they are in the solution.
Okay, let's go to the inbox controller.
So in the gtd.client core project, there's a folder called controllers, and there's a file called inboxcontroller.cs. That inbox controller is affiliated with helping the thing up in the gtd.client views folder called inboxview.cs to do its stuff.
So basically, you can perceive all the views,
mm-hmm.
main view, main form, all the forms. They are just UI.
Yes.
The UI that will do nothing. It will not react to any button press, or it's just a design.
Yeah, dumb presentation layer. It's a little bit better than a JPEG.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then the controllers are the elements that are plugged on top of them and that kind of bring this stuff alive. So views are kind of like skin of a person,
mm-hmm.
but there is nothing inside to drive the personality. Controllers, they are the muscles. Controllers, they will help each part of the like your body to move. And these muscles, they may be attaching to some bone structure, and they're driven by the impulses. And in our case, impulses, as always, are messages.
Got it.
So a messaging subsystem of this application is a neural network, or it's like something that spreads the information around.
Mm-hmm.
View controller, it can be, it's not the brain, but it's part of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And all the muscles, they are linked to this part of the brain, and they are driven by them.
Got it.
So the controller, they're actually tightly linked to the type of view. They're not linked to the view implementation, but they're linked with the type of view. So inbox controller and this this inbox controller, it manages the inbox where you can show inbox, where you can add inbox, when you can remove inbox, and where you can actually drag stuff into the inbox.
Yes.
You can drag stuff from the inbox. You can drag stuff from the inbox to the project. So I think currently the controllers, they're agnostic from the view implementation, but the view implementation has to stick to a specific contract. So the controller, its view and view implementation, they tightly link to the type of UI that you're implementing.
Okay.
Which means that if we implemented maybe inbox controller for the iPhone app would be similar to the inbox controller for the desktop app. It's really hard to tell without diving into the domain. But sometimes, like, different types of devices, like different categories of devices, they bring different expectations about the UI. They bring different usage patterns. And if you try to make the iPhone UI exactly the same as desktop UI, you'll have upset customers, upset users, because they might have different expectations about the iPhone app versus Android app versus desktop app. So if we were to implement the inbox controller, for example, for the smartphone application, so it's like smartphone inbox controller.
Yes.
Then in this case, we would know that the inbox view implementation would probably, like, we can reuse this controller with different implementations of the inbox view, where one is sitting on the Xamarin, the other one is sitting on the smartphone or on the iOS, and the other one may be sitting on the Windows phone.
Right.
So basically, the inbox controller, as I currently feel, they're specific to the type of the UI you are developing, because different types of the UI, different categories of the UI, they have different expectations and different functionality.
Yeah, yeah. I think that'll be interesting to get into, is the two primary differences and experiences, either a traditionally desktop keyboard mouse environment or a touchscreen touch sort of environment, is the two main user experience paradigms that most people have to deal with right now.
Well, absolutely.
So,
and also, if we're talking about the environments, phone environment would be different from the iPad environment, because we have different amount of screen state. iPhone environment versus iPad environments, I think they're conceptually different, because they are part of the same operating system. They're kind of similar device, like Apple device. However, in practice, iPhone app is really constrained, which means that you can't really take an iPad app and shrink it down and fit it in the iPhone's UI.
Sure, right.
Because things will be too small, and you'll probably need to work hard on figuring out what has to be removed from each screen to make sure that it's usable.
Correct.
And the same, likewise, you can't, well, technically you can take an iPhone app and just expand it and display it on the iPad screen. However, like, the user experience would be suboptimal. That's why a lot of companies are developing specifically applications, versions of the application for the iPad.
Yep.
Okay, so with this, I was trying to kind of share my understanding that although the controllers, they can operate with different implementation of a view because it is abstracted away by the interface, still maybe the functionality between this controller and the corresponding view might be specific to the type of the UI that you're dealing with.
Yes.
So the reusability might be limited. Of course, maybe in some cases it's possible to reuse the same controller between multiple applications.
Yep.
Okay. So we talked about the domain model, which is, and the differences between the client model and the presentation layer. And in our case, the presentation layer is composed from some of the controllers and view implementations. So we have MVC pattern, model view controller. And in our case, the model is the client model and the events it sends.
Okay.
And the events, they include large chunks of this client model, like as immutable. So it's really easy to share the same, a lot of like the same memory space, if you wish, in a safe way between multiple controllers. And event-driven nature of the application, event-driven design of the application, it really helps to break down the functionality in really small controllers that are really focused. For example, I've added a controller called Navigate Back Controller.
Right.
Navigate Back controller. So if you launch an application and you switch between, for example, between multiple projects and inbox, there is a button called Go Back.
Yes.
So as you press this Go Back model, it will navigate back in history between like all the projects and coming back all the way to the inbox, which you are shown when the application started. And this view part of this is like a menu button that is hosted on the main form. And the controller that controls this small portion of the menu, it's a separate controller that only knows that here's the interface that I'm managing. I navigate back view. And these are the messages that I'm subscribed to and the messages that I publish.
Got it.
So currently, one of the advantages of this event-driven design with MVC model is that I can break the functionality in really small pieces. And so maybe some of the pieces are usable on different platforms, on different types of the UI. Some of the pieces may be really specific. We'll see. And currently, my next plans on evolving this UI is to add a bit more of functionality, to add more features, just to see how design behaves. Because the design should support adding this stuff. Current design, its goal is to simplify adding features. And then probably we could work in line to deal with two directions, one of them being trying Xamarin approach to see how this experience can be ported to other systems while reusing the majority of the code base. Mm-hmm. Because the domain model and the UI, the client model, they are reusable. They're absolutely reusable. It's the view and controller part that might need to change.
Yeah.
And the second portion being dealing with the server side, like pushing changes back to the server and merging the conflicts if they show up.
That sounds good. I think that in my personal projects that I'm working on, in addition to this, I'm working on a lot of similar but different stuff that I'll probably have some questions on. And I might try to summarize like what I'm seeing over there, because there's a whole other universe of people seeming like they're trying to solve these same kinds of problems, but they're doing it in a little bit different way that I currently think is actually a pretty good design, and it makes total logical sense to me. And I need to sort of finish understanding that and then understand this when I'm playing this episode back, because I think it's very, very related. I'm still not connecting the docs completely. Like, where in the GTD code, we have these this thing passing the messages around or the events around so that they react to it. This other Xamarin MVVM cross platform uses traditional MVVM, quote, messengers to publish and subscribe events that come from the UI and the la, la, la. Like, it's all very similar, and they're all doing message-related, passing around, disconnected, modular, reusable things. And I just need to finish absorbing some of that so that I can compare the two. Because I think when we get to the Xamarin kind of implementation, there seems to be a pretty big community around using a specific approach on how you would do that if you're going to use the Xamarin tools for Android, iOS, and Windows Phone, mm-hmm. etc. And I want to be able to understand that so I can compare, like, hey, is our approach easier or way more difficult? And what's the pros and cons of it? Because I don't know how to compare those yet.
Absolutely. And actually, well, I don't have a lot of UI experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why that is one of the reasons I went into this project and trying to make it like really UI friendly,
mm-hmm.
user friendly. And then maybe I'll be possible to convert you to the simplicity of this approach, mm-hmm. like how it breaks down. Mm-hmm. Then actually, like, I didn't invent anything on that. Mm-hmm. I was just following diligently to one of the patterns that Martin Fowler documented and that emerged in the community, mm-hmm. model view controller,
mm-hmm.
Where the view is really humble and it's really thin, and the majority of functionality resides in the controller, with a single twist that our models and model changes, they are published as events.
Yep.
That's it.
And that's where I'm getting at. I think that when you're trying to convert me, I will also be trying to convert you so that we can get on to a middle ground of like, I think we're talking about the same things. It's just different camps are using different vocabulary words to do basically the same thing, which is MV star-ish stuff. And each separate subculture uses different words to achieve basically the same thing. And even in our server-side stuff where we're using events and messaging and keeping things distributed in their own components and notifying things via events and having application services that, which are basically like controllers, la, 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 all these architectures seem very related, and they're all circling around this common goal of concepts, but for whatever reason, everyone, you know, someone's choosing to use Spanish, someone's using French, someone's using Russian, someone's using English. And I don't know why we haven't just picked one common language to basically describe these same concepts, which means I want to have disconnected, not tightly coupled components that I can glue together, that communicate via messaging, events, whatever you want to call it, via a decoupled infrastructure, blah, blah. Like, those are the kinds of things going on all the things I'm seeing, and I'm just trying to tie them all together. So, so it'll be interesting to see what you think.
Absolutely, and it's actually a wonderful learning experience to be able, like, to find the problems with the language that I use and how it actually correlates to what people are from the outside world are using and how they're dealing with the UIs. Because, well, you definitely have a lot more experience with the UI than I have.
Well, that's pretty scary because I don't have that much. and I'm brand new to all the MVVM, MVC, and similar stuff that you're doing. So I think we're both kind of green on that. We don't necessarily exactly know what we're talking about yet. But I love that you're sort of doing that investigation on the Martin Fowler and Roslyn side of stuff, and I get what's going on here, and I like how it's related to all the stuff we've been doing from the server side. So my tendency is to sort of lean towards what we have here because it makes more sense based on what we've already been doing. But also the MVVM stuff and the work that's going on with MVVM Cross and the Xamarin side of stuff is also very interesting to me because it's familiar from the Silverlight kind of WPF data binding stuff. And at the end of the day, MVVM is about a prerequisite of data binding and taking advantage of data binding. And so that's what this approach with the Xamarin stuff is doing, is basically the ability for the view model to data bind to cross-platform views.
Pardon me, but if I'm not mistaken, Xamarin, iOS, and other stuff, they don't have view binding.
Right.
They don't have data binding.
No, they don't. That's why the thing I'm using, this framework, is called MVVM Cross. Stuart Lodge is the main guy on it, but the company that actually wrote the Kinect for Star Wars, like social game or whatever for Microsoft when they launched, there was a video game for Star Wars using the Kinect, and Microsoft had this company launch an Android, Windows Phone, and iOS app to kind of promote it and post stuff on social networks and stuff. And they were like, man, we got to do three different platforms. Like, how can we try to achieve this code reusability if we're going to use... They looked at the native stuff and did all the research. And they're like, okay, cool. We think we're going to use C# and Xamarin. But we still don't have like all the goodness of data binding and stuff that we want. So what have others done without, you know, in this universe? And that was the MVVM pattern. So what they implemented and open sourced was this thing called MVVM Cross, which basically gives you data bindingable stuff on Android, iOS, and Windows phones, so that at the end of the day, and what I'm implementing right now and my personal stuff trying to get it to work, and it's working so far, is exactly that. It's where I have my view models all the way back down are theoretically reusable, and the only difference is the platform-specific native UI views for each device you're targeting. And you build an iOS GUI and on your Mac like you normally would. And because you're using these tools, you have the ability to bind that Xcode view to your existing reusable C# view model. And on Android and WPF, really WPF, they've got them for Windows 8, all that stuff. So there's cool stuff going on there, and it's similar concepts. So I'll try to narrow down what might be interesting for you to see in 30 minutes to just get your opinion and thoughts on it, because I think it's very... The goals are very similar, and the approaches are very similar, but the vocabulary is slightly different.
Okay. Actually, one side thought, when I was exploring for the different ways to design elements of the UI, to structure them, to architect them, like I was thinking about the data binding, but based on the assumption that data binding is only for the Windows, and hence I can't really data bind client model to the UI. Apparently, I was wrong. So maybe it will be you who converts me.
Oh, potentially, yeah. For sure, at least for iOS, Android, Windows Phone, Windows 8, WPF, I think those are the main ones. They don't have Silverlight yet. But for at least those platforms, this particular framework does let you achieve data binding across those platforms.
Okay, terrific. I'll need to check this out.
When we get done here, if you want, I can narrow down. There's a lot of stuff. He's been on several podcasts, and he's done a ton of awesome videos that describe this stuff. But I'll send you to a presentation that kind of summarizes it for you. It's pretty cool.
Actually, speaking of the design patterns, that's one of the links I definitely want to include as the show notes. Graphical UI Architectures article by Martin Fowler, where he goes deeply into the different design patterns, like Model View Controller, then talks about the model, like different application models, how they evolved. He talks about Model View Presenter. He talks about the Humble View and all the differences. Passive View, Supervising Controller. Mm-hmm. I believe he talks about MVVM as well, and actually why the definition is not precisely exact.
So anyway, so Renat and I are going to continue down our journey of learning client-side user interface design approaches and architecture and figure out what seems to make sense and which approach allows us to add new features without lots and lots of pain, especially with our goal of trying to actually get this on the mobile side of things too. So we'll continue to learn. I'm going to play this back and learn about what we've got right now. You guys can do that too. And until next time, we are at beingtheworst.com. We are at beingtheworst on Twitter. Renat, do you want to say anything else before we stop talking?
May the source be with you.
May the source be with you. Well, at least you're not talking like Yoda now. You could say Yoda thing if you want. But anyway, we'll see you guys next time. Take care.
Take care, you guys. Bye.
Bye.